Well, it's good to be with you all today, and to be able to preach, to deliver the sermon for today. As many of you know, I work professionally in theology and stuff like that, and it's always I find that always when I'm involved in the church and preaching, and it's always a good thing for my spiritual walk as well as my academic work, oddly enough, that my theology is rooted and informed by the life of the church of Christians. Though these are really busy times, academically speaking, and in my personal life and everything. They're challenging and they're busy, but really busy in many ways. But I'm very glad for this opportunity. the sermon planning, interestingly enough, for the last few years, I've been involved in the sermon planning. For the last few years, I've been involved in the sermon planning. And this current sermon series is a bit new to me because, of course, Tu has been planning the sermons. And so it's nice because, I'm not as involved in the details, but it's also, I have no clue what's going on. it's kind of like homeschooling. I don't know, for those of you who are homeschooling, the school gives you a teaching plan of the things that you're supposed to teach your kids, and you gotta like figure out what the teachers want you to do, and it's Wikipedia and YouTube become your friends, because I have to like relearn how to do math using number bonds. What are number bonds? I never taught it. Phonics, and these different things, that I don't know how to do, and I was I know how to do math, basic arithmetic and stuff like that, and basic science and vocabulary and things like that, but not in the same way. And actually, this sermon in many ways reminds me a little bit of that, because the title that was given was "Set Your Mind on Things Above," and of course, it's from the passage itself. And part of me was trying to figure out what was Tu thinking about, right? Because Tu had planned this, and I was like, am I trying to set my mind on things of Tu, but as I was reading and praying and reflecting on this short passage, four little verses actually, I realized that this passage was in many ways trying to figure out how God is thinking. And I'll get more into this in a moment, but right now, I'm going to share my screen, and we'll read the passage first, and we'll get into the discussion of it. Colossians 3, verses 1 through 4. "If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory." Now, these four short verses we find in middle of Colossians in chapter 3. And it's set in the midst of this letter to Colossae, the church in Colossae. And of course, the last 2 weeks, if you've been with us, you would have heard a number of sermons by Tu, looking at the earlier parts in chapter 2 of Colossians. In particular, the topics were to be alive in Christ and qualified in Christ. And in the first sermon within the book of Colossians that Tu covered, to be alive in Christ, in Colossians 2, 6 through 15, it really emphasized, this death and resurrection that we have, that Christ had, but also that we have with him, and what it means to have a new life in Christ. And in that sermon, to talk a little bit about, you know, this heavenly thinking, this way of thinking heavenly, but not necessarily having your mind in the clouds, but how a new life, a full life, is offered by this heavenly living. Then the sermon from last week was about being qualified in Christ, and namely what the qualifications are not based on what we have achieved, but what Christ has achieved on our behalf. And he gave this really interesting story of his own life and how he was unqualified for medical school and the like, but how we are qualified because of the life that Christ has for us. And in the verses that will come after these four verses in chapter 3, immediately after, there's a few verses that really is like a laundry list of sinful earthly living. Okay, so it's this laundry list of sins. And then after that, it's this passage about putting on Christ, and Jeremy is going to be with us preaching on that passage. What it means to have a heavenly or Christly living, if you will. Now, if we think about our passage, this passage sits in between these sets of verses, right? And this passage is, you know, as it begins, it begins quite interestingly, I think. Because Paul, I think, is kind of like many of us. He gets distracted really easily. You know, so Paul, you know, if you recall, you know, two sermons ago, you know, he was talking about being alive in Christ and how we have died and rose again with Christ. Then he gets distracted and he talks about how we need to be qualified. And then he here in this verse, in verse 1, you know, he goes back to this idea of being raised with Christ. And he goes back to this original discussion of what it means to be raised and alive in Christ. Now, what I think is important when we're looking at this passage is to realize that for Paul, he's using spatial imagery. And I think that that's actually quite an interesting approach. Okay, he's using space. Okay, and so, you know, we're here, you know, we're here on Earth, right? Here's Scotland, and, you know, this is where we are down here on Earth. And you know, we are here, and we're often thinking and acting as though nothing has changed in our lives, but we have been raised in Christ. This idea that he starts these verses with, right? If then you have been raised with Christ, right? And so if we are raised with Christ, then we have to have a different way of thinking and acting, right? Christ is above, in heaven, okay, seated on the right hand of God, okay? You never draw a picture of God, okay, because God cannot be drawn, right? But, you know, Jesus is in heaven, seated at the right hand of God. It's not necessarily, and to cover this quite well, I think, in the last few sermons, that it's not necessarily that heaven is, you know, this exact location above us, okay? You can't go on your phone and look it up on your map or plot the GPS coordinates of heaven, okay? You can't go there. It's not a spatial, it's not a position per se, but it's a orientation more, right? So Paul is using the language of space, comparing heaven above and earth below, not talking about the position that you're at, but really talking about the ways that you're thinking, the ways that we approach life. And so he's comparing what a full and godly life looks like, as opposed to a life that doesn't take into account God. But Paul also says two things about that which is above, namely that which is godly and with Christ. The first is to say is this idea of seeking the things that are above. And when he speaks about how we are to seek these things, this is to say that we don't always know. That to be a Christian does not mean that you have all the answers. To be a Christian does mean that you know the path to the answers, namely that the path is in Christ. And that through Christ, we are able to search for this heavenly, this godly living. But he also speaks about setting our minds, your minds, on the things that are above. What does this mean? It's actually quite an odd phrase, to set your minds on things that are above. I don't know why most English translations of the Bible translates this, because it's quite a weird way of saying it, right? But what it's, because nobody talks about, you know, by the way, set your minds on things that are above. You know, by the way, you know, set your minds this way. You know, nobody really speaks like that, right? But really what this passage is saying, what this verse is saying, is that we are to think about things that are above. We are to consider, carefully consider, to wrestle with in your mind and to make a judgment on, to deliberate and to ask, what is it? To try to figure it out. And you know, the reason why Paul speaks in these ways, when he talks about seeking the things that are above and setting our minds on the things that are above, he's really emphasizing how we think. Because how we think affects how we act. And how we act affects who we become. You know, you could think about, you know, nowadays, you know, under lockdown, you know, we are constantly trying to find new things to do, right? I don't know what hobbies you've picked up, you know, in your homes and the like. You know, I have personally invested in a cast iron pan and invested a lot of time trying to figure out how to clean the thing, you know, because cast iron pans, you don't clean the same way, and how to cook with it and you know, how to get it at the right temperature and you know, my wife does not want to touch it after it's used. She wants to use it. She doesn't want to clean it because she doesn't know how to clean it. And I get really angry when she cleans it because she doesn't clean it right, right? And she hasn't watched all the YouTube videos that I've watched on how to clean a cast iron pan, right? And you know, all these different things that we're trying to figure out, you know, Google is your friend, right? Or DuckDuckGo if you're into privacy. You know, Google is your friend. So you want to find out ways, you seek, or literally you search for the best ways to clean the pan. And you don't just search for it, right? You don't just hit the search button and then boom, okay, that's what it is. No, you search and then you start looking through and you deliberate. This video tells me to do this. This video tells me to do that. I'm not sure which one's better. Let me look at a third one. Let me figure this out, right? And so you're actually not only seeking, but you're trying to consider, you're trying to set your minds on these things. You're trying to deliberate and see what the best way is to accomplish that task. And the more we think about these things, the more we act on them, and the more that we improve in that skill, and you know, perhaps we become better cooks, right? And the fact is that the way that we think and the way that we deliberate ultimately results in a changed person, a better cook in the process. And this is what Paul is getting at, that we need to seek the things that are above. We need to seek and set our minds on the things that are above and not things that are on earth. So we are to seek and consider. We are to look for the best ways to live and wrestle with the choices that are most pleasing to God, so that by setting our minds on the things above, we become more like He who is above. And this is actually why I'm glad that 2 gave me 4 verses. Because the verses immediately after this, namely verses 5 through 11, is a laundry list of sins. Okay, not that I don't like talking about sins. You know, that's not my point. I think one of the challenges with the verses afterwards is oftentimes people look at this as, this is the absolute list of sins. Right? This is a laundry list of sins. And therefore, if I don't do these things, I'm holy. If I don't do these sins, then I'm right with God. And that's not the point of that list. And so it's not a formula, right? It's not what the passage is saying. It's that we are to seek and to consider, to deliberate, to wrestle with what it means to live a life that is honoring and pleasing to God. Now, if we move on to the last two verses of this passage, we can observe two things automatically. First of all, you know, the first two verses that we looked at, we are looking at things that Paul is telling us to do, okay, commands, if you will, of how to live, how to think, how to live our lives because we're alive in Him, in Christ. But these two verses are about our status before God. I'll get to this more in a moment, but the emphasis here is not on what you should do, but who you are already. And we also have a shift in imagery. While verses 1 and 2 emphasize a kind of a spatial imagery, verses 3 and 4 have a temporal imagery, that is, across time. Paul explains that if we have died with Christ, our old lives are hidden in that death. This is the past. But even more, when Christ appears, we will appear with Him in glory. This is the future. But why is this important? With the spatial imagery, Paul wants us to change the way we think, to set our minds on things that are above. With the temporal imagery, Paul wants us to be changed, to be affected by the future. Some theologians talk about this in terms of our eschatological ontology. What is that? Our eschatological ontology basically is the idea that the future affects our status now, right? That because we have a future and we know what the future is, it changes how we are oriented in our lives today and right now. It's like my son Benjamin. Hi, Benjamin. It's like my son Benjamin. You know, December is his favorite month. Okay? Why? Okay? Because it has two big celebrations at the end of the month: Christmas and his birthday. So that means that in the beginning and in the middle of December, he's excited about December. Okay, why? Because the middle and the beginning of December point to the end of December. He knows that it's December, and because he knows it's December, he knows that this future is in front of him, and it changes his outlook on life. It changes his outlook on his day-to-day life. There's so much to look forward to at the end of December that the beginning of December is changed. And I think we are all to live like December is every month for us. That we are to live with a sense in which the future changes our status right now. And, you know, I don't know about yourselves, but for me, you know, there was this huge sense of dread that came over me when the current lockdown came into effect. I mean, you know, everybody knew it was going to happen, but when it actually came, you know, I actually became really sad. You know, there's lots of uncertainties. You know, when is it going to let up? You know, I was uncertain when and if I was ever to be able to see my family in North America again. I felt really unsure about the future, and oddly enough, that was shaping my outlook on my day-to-day. Yet as Christians, we are to seek the things that are above and to set our minds on things that are above. Practically speaking, this means that we are to change the ways we go about and think about our lives. We are to change the ways we live our lives. But even more, it is changed by God. That God has changed it already, and that the future has been changed by God. But that also means that our statuses today have changed. We are to live like December is every month. But I think there's another takeaway that we have from our passage today. And I think the problem, part of the problem is that, we are all reading probably this in English. I mean, most of us. David probably has his Greek Bible open like he often does. Be like David, read the Greek. Because, see, if we look at the English, we use the word you, whether we are talking about one person or a whole bunch of people, right? When I say you, I could refer to all of you or just one person. And here, if you look at this passage again, and you look at the major verbs, right, the action words, the doing words, they are all about you in the plural. That is, Paul is speaking about you as the church, as a community. And so the change of status is not the change of status for us as individuals, per se. But what Paul is emphasizing is that the change in our minds and in our actions and in our lives and in our status is one that we share as a church together. We are not alone. We are to work together to support one another, especially in these times, in times of our greatest difficulty. The church is not to be socially distant, but socially present with one another. Only in this way are we able to truly set our lives and our minds on God, living life to the full, living life in abundance. That our status as a church, as a community, as Christians, is changed because of what God has done. That Christ has been risen, and we have risen with him.